Think it's time to find out, Sophie Ellis Bexter, how old you really are.
Go on then.
Very dramatic. Do you have a guess?
Well, I mean, you mentioned several things I do wrong. I'm going to put myself... I'm going to go for in my 60s.
60s?
But right. I'm also... I'm cool with that.
Sophie Ellis Bexter, your result is... Hello, I'm Katherine Ryan, and this is another fabulous episode of What's My Age Again, the podcast all about aging. But it's not just about finding your nearest hyperbaric chamber or a clinic for sperm injectables. It is also about how you feel about getting older and what you do to feel young. This week, my guest is Sophie Ellis Bexter. I know. If you are 40, like me, you will know Sophie for her smash hit Murder on the Dance Floor. If you're 14, you will know it. It made a huge comeback after it was used in the iconic closing scene of the cult film Saltburn. She is ageless, but also 45. But how old is her body? Sophie has, like all of our guests, taken a biological age test, which we will reveal later on in the show with our resident scientist, Nicola Conlin, on hand to interpret the results. Sophie Ellis Bexter, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
How are you feeling about your biological age?
I'm intrigued by all conversations about age, actually.
Really?
I think about it pretty often. I mean, it's happening to me in real time, and it's pretty relevant to my work. I think if you're lucky enough to have a creative job, then you're often checking in on what's going on in your real life. Mm-hmm. So the age I'm at has been a really ripe source of inspiration for songwriting as well. I'm not saying I'm like what rhymes with 45, but it's more just I feel like albums always like a diary entry for where you are, and it's definitely relevant that I'm not the same age I was the last time I made an album or when I started singing.
Yes, and how weird would it be to be frozen in time?
Yes.
Still singing about the same things.
Definitely.
But it sounds to me like the way you answer that question, you're conscious of aesthetic age too, being a pop star, how you're seen by the music industry. And may I say, this music industry is sick. Like the way they parade little girls. It's not an accident that Ariana Grande looks 9.
I think it's also when you start out as a singer, it's really startling because I was being assessed when I like 18 before I'd even got even the smallest handle on how I felt about myself. And that definitely freaked me out.
Yeah.
But that being said, I don't really live in a sort of like bird's eye view of myself. And I don't really feel too concerned about it from my work point of view or in the aesthetic kind of thing in that way. But I think it's more about my perspective.
Okay.
And actually embracing it, because in a lot of ways, I think I'm way better at being someone in my 40s than I was being someone in my 20s.
Yeah.
I think, dare I say, being a middle-aged woman is like, I really love it. There's like an unexpected power in it.
So would you say you feel 45?
Yeah, I do actually. Yeah. But I also like it.
Yeah.
Is that strange?
I mean, I think it's easier for you to say than if you were ugly.
Is that what it's about?
Yeah. Well, no, but in your industry, I'm sure that you are rewarded still for being very young looking and very beautiful and very thin. You know what I mean? You still, even though you are very comfortable in yourself in your 40s, as I am, we can't deny that there is a lens where you either fit into this acceptable look or you don't. And you very much, I think, look the same as you did when you were 20.
Well, thank you. But I appreciate what you're saying, but I feel like that version of my life is like a small percentage of how I live. And actually the majority of it is being around the people I work with and my family and my husband. And I think it would be harder for me to say if the people around me didn't reflect back a version of me that makes me feel good, actually. Mm-hmm. And I think that is actually the best thing in my life about helping me feel good about things, because there's no denying things change and shift. Mm-hmm. I've also got really good role models. I'm really close to my mum, both emotionally and geographically. She's a 10-minute walk away from me.
10 minutes?
I know, yeah. And my eldest boy lives with her now, which is really sweet. And she's always given me a good example of that as well. And she's always framed things in a very positive way. Little things, like I didn't grow up with scales in the house. She never spoke about diets. I've never actually heard her say a negative comment about how she looks, which isn't to say she's going around saying positive things either. But I think that stuff does seep in, and I really hope I'm doing a similar job. I think in a lot of ways I'm not doing as well a job, because I think I talk about being old a bit with the kids. You know, I say, oh, I'm old and your old mother and things. And I think actually children really don't like that. Mm. They find it a bit upsetting. So I have to stop that, because for them, old means closer to death.
Yeah.
Which obviously is a side note of it, but it's not really where I want the emphasis to be.
How interesting, because I love your mother. I think that she's an amazing woman and it seems like a positive role model. But to hear about a woman of that generation just not even having skills, she would have been very provocative and disruptive, I think, to be that way.
Yeah, I think you're right, actually.
I try to do that with my daughter as well, as I think about inclusivity rather than exclusivity. So I wouldn't say like, don't eat that, don't eat that. But I'd say like, have you had fish this week? Have you drank enough water today?
Hmm.
But she does exist on a diet of fried chicken.
Oh, I love fried chicken.
I know.
It's really nice.
I don't mind fried chicken, but I think you probably have to have an apple in the week.
Yes. Fried apple?
Huh? A fried apple. I don't mind a fried apple. Go ahead. Do you think that you act your age? Whatever that means.
Yeah, what does that mean? Sometimes yes, sometimes no. The problem with being a musician from a young age is I've been allowed to slightly crystallize a very adolescent part of me.
Yeah.
So you can, especially on tour life, you're allowed to just be like, I don't know how to open an envelope. You can mm-hmm. be really very young and very mollycoddled when you're working. And that means that sometimes I revel in it and sometimes you get very frustrated. Like, why is someone just assuming I can't do that for myself? I'm a grown up.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, why is no one just taking care of all this messy stuff that I have to deal with? So I think, no, sometimes I probably could do with a bit of growing up. And it normally is when things go a bit wonky that you then have to accept, you have to take responsibility for stuff.
But I mean, you have this very responsible life with all these kids and a home and a husband, and you're very much hands-on at home. Do you have staff or anything?
Staff. That sounds great.
Especially in my accent. Staff. Do you have staff, ma'am?
I have support, yeah. I have childcare support.
Childcare.
I would not be able to do what I do without that.
But there aren't any butlers.
No, I've looked in every room. I haven't found a single butler.
Because I wonder if the pop stars from today will be as competent at 45. Because you mentioned the mollycoddling and the hand-holding of touring. Mm. Do you think that's got better or worse or stayed the same?
I think whether people will continue, how they live their life is actually down to what makes you feel good. Because I think when I was young, my first record deal, I signed at 18 and was dropped by the time I was 20. So for me, keeping things quite low key and grounded and being across everything also was a way of protecting myself, because if the more people I relied upon and the more insulation, if you like, I put between me and, the life when things aren't working, then the more would have to be dismantled if it went wrong.
Yeah.
And so I think sometimes the fact that I've kept things at heart, the essence of how I approach things is very similar to when I was like 18, is because I knew what it felt like when it all went south. And I thought the idea of having an amazing, cushy life and then having to like take that scaffolding down was worse than just being able to just be like self-reliant and resilient in my own little backpack, really.
Yeah.
So I think that was a result of that, probably.
I've done that with relationships. I think that's called being hyper-independent as a trauma response.
Yeah, a little bit, yeah. But I think the flip of it is it does mean that you are also responsible for what happens to you a bit more.
Yeah.
In a way that I always think I would have been really ghastly if I hadn't been dropped at that age, because if everything had just always gone like from one peak to another I mean, I think I would have been a nightmare. I think it would have been hideous.
You'd be Bieber.
I can't speak for Bieber. But yeah, say fearless Bieber.
So, you've always been really resilient.
Yeah, I think so.
That sounds very grown up, because you would have had to be grown up to even acknowledge that at 20, to go, oh no, this can be taken away, so I better build my own scaffolding.
Yeah, it was very sobering. But I think also I was introduced to the music industry in the 90s, which was pretty sink or swim environment.
Yeah.
Yeah, I shudder with a lot of the stuff I did early on, actually. I actually had to kind of go back through some of it when I was writing an autobiography a couple of years back and went back through all these early interviews, and it was like, oh, it actually was as horrible as I remember it. Questions I was asked, ways I was assessed. I think it did make me put on a little suit of armor, a little bit. Yeah. Don't know if it's necessarily growing up, but definitely just a little bit of protection and some stuff to protect me from getting too upset by things that felt personal.
Yeah. So like leery questions, creepy questions.
Yeah, all of that. Yeah. Yeah.
And I mean, it was the whole industry, wasn't it?
It was. But the thing is, at the time, I thought that every other, especially the other women, were coping with it really well. Mm-hmm. And it's quite nice now if I meet people, peers that were doing similar things at that time, because I realized everybody was feeling similarly freaked out. But we were all doing a really good job of seeming completely cool with it, thanks. Because that was the game. You had to be able to keep up. But I feel like I was fortunate because it was before the dawn of social media. So a lot of my experimentation, because you do, your first time of trying all those things, I'll try that harm. Maybe I am that person.
Yeah.
And also, no judgment to the people that works for. I just was able to explore a little bit and come back to the things that made me feel okay without it being something I'm still confronted with. There's a lot of stuff that's lost to time.
See, I was going to ask what makes you feel old, but that makes me feel very grateful about being old.
Yeah.
When I look at, because we have children the same age, every decision they make is published.
Yes.
Every thought they have is published.
Yeah, that's a lot, isn't it?
You have all boys, don't you?
I do, yeah.
Do you feel that is aging?
I think five kids is definitely a lot. I think they're five people, and being a boy is like the thing they all have in common, but they're all really different.
Yeah.
But I think having five kids, you start off with one idea of what it's going to be, and then as they've multiplied, the enormity of what I've taken on has kind of expanded too, and you think, I didn't quite realize quite what I was doing, but here I am.
Was five not always the number in your head then? You just thought more?
No, when I had my first one, that was plenty. Mm-hmm. I found having my first baby knocked me for six in a lot of ways, and it took me quite a few years, I think, to find my right way up again. I loved being his mum, but I found it hard to feel like myself.
Yeah.
And then I didn't have another one until he was nearly five. And then I got into more of a flow.
And then you
but
just
it was always, it was like, just one more. Yeah.
That's how I feel too, because I think those of us who want to be mothers, and not everyone does, and that's fine, but it's such a superpower. Like, we can make people, like I can make a whole person, and then you can't do that forever. And that made me very conscious of my age. My husband and I reunited, we were together when we were young. And then I made a lot of bad decisions for 20 years. And then we got back together, which was the worst decision. And
I actually think that's incredibly romantic.
It's cute.
Yeah.
Most days. He takes the bins out, gets the Christmas tree down from the loft, you know. But 35, it was like, we've missed 20 years and now we have to have these kids right now if we want to have these kids. And it doesn't get taken away from men the same way it gets taken away from us.
That's definitely different. But then there's aspects of, I think, we put a lot of emphasis on the mothering when they're little, but actually the mothering goes on for the whole rest of your life and ebbs and flows. And also the things you're good at. I think in a lot of ways I'm better as a mother of older kids than the little ones. So I think you can find different chapters that you really come into your own a little bit more. And I think that happens with age as well. Like, I don't think I was, not everybody's born to be brilliant at being a teenager or being in their 30s. It might be that you're brilliant at being in your 60s. I think we've really got to fly the flag for all these different chapters you go through and how that might be something that suits you better, and to be a little bit more forgiving of yourself for the bits that don't feel quite that they click.
Yeah. Did you feel like being a mother the first time was harder than the fifth time, or just always hard?
No, definitely more of a shift. For I think the jump from 0 to 1 is the biggest, and then actually 1 to 2 was much more. I thought it was like, you've got one, it's going to be fine, and then it's like sort of double stuff. And by the time I had my fifth, I felt great about a lot of it. Actually, I did the most work, but I really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
You know, I did a gig, arguably one of my biggest solo gigs, sort of 6 months pregnant in platform heels, and I felt like a superhero, actually. Mm-hmm. And I don't think I would have had the confidence to feel like that with my first.
Yeah.
That was my thing anyway.
See, I don't know. I think they get harder. The older I get, the harder I think. My pregnancies are pretty easy, but just like looking after them, being awake all night.
Oh, yeah.
I think it is a 20-year-old's game, not a 40-year-old's game.
My last one was the worst sleeper by a long way as well. Like, thanks for that. You know, I just didn't sleep through the night for years. But I think I've definitely, you know, the adage about being more relaxed definitely mm-hmm. was true. And also, I think it's a little bit of a secret weapon sometimes having a bigger kid in the house.
Yeah.
The little one and seeing that relationship that they have is really, really nice.
An unpaid au pair.
Yeah, exactly.
Is what mine is. Yeah. I just think for biological age in that regard, and I don't know the science behind it, but we will be speaking to a scientist soon. I've read a lot of troubling things.
Why trouble the podcast with science? Just make your own science.
I know. I like to usually make my own science, but I'm worried that these babies are parasites and they leach from our bones and they take the minerals that we had, and they are existentially rewarding.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm worried that they just feast upon everything that we have, and they do age us.
I think that probably is true.
Oh, man.
But
and you've had five.
What lies in the envelope? Has it ever gone into triple figures before?
Mine is very old. Very old.
I'd actually be quite proud if I was the oldest biological, like the oldest age you'd have. I'd be like, there you go. There's your science.
That would be
cool.
We
can work it out for ourselves.
Let's talk about your career. Lots of pop stars peak in their 20s and then their careers kind of wane, I guess. That's the nature of the beast, but not with you. So you've gone from strength to strength. Did you actively reinvent yourself, or was this whole salt burn resurgence like kind of a fluke?
Well, firstly, I think careers tend to be a bit like this, really. They're quite a wiggly line.
Mm-hmm.
And I've definitely had moments where I've been very aware, like other people would probably go and get another job at this point. But I think one of the things that's helped me is I've really got nothing else I could think of that I'd be able to do. Music is the thing I love, but also I just not like, literally no qualifications. So is this or bust? And I think with Saltburn, that's just been an extraordinary thing. But also, I was really at a time when I could take it and run with it.
Mm-hmm.
The band and I were already fairly match fit in terms of touring and making new music. I was already planning a new album. So when Murder on the Dance Floor had a resurgence last year, I could just really enjoy it and also see it completely for what it is, like this glorious once in a lifetime thing. And just really enjoy the celebration of it. Also, it was a really happy thing that it's not just any song from my career, but one of the first songs I put out as a solo artist. So it's quite nice to be able to properly delve back into that chapter and think about how I felt back then. And I work with a lot of the same people, so I could celebrate it with them too. It was just like loads of fun, actually.
And it's great that you kept match fit and really sharp with the touring and the writing, because that is what Britney Spears, bad example, but she did say when opportunity knocks, you have to be ready. And I think that's what like a true creative does. Like a real artist is always working, always writing. And then that could have been a very quick, oh, Murder on the Dance Floor. Oh, yes, we love it. And then gone. But you've really capitalized on it the right way and been like, and guess what? I'm ready with all this other music.
I think so. I mean, yeah. And also I'm on really good terms with it. I'm actually really good friends with that song and mm-hmm. with the memories that it brings. And I haven't stopped singing it since it came out anyway. And it intrigues me and it revitalizes my relationship with pop mm-hmm. because it reminds me that particularly with pop music, it's about the energy of the dialogue. The worst things that can happen when you release new music is that no one responds to it.
Yeah.
You know, even if it's a negative, you want that freestyle, you want the energy that comes back and forth. And so the fact that Murder on Dance Floor continued a conversation,
mm-hmm.
you know, quarter of a century after it comes out, how wonderful is that? How exciting. Like it puts real like energy in the veins of everything. And I think that's a real privilege, and it's not lost on me that, you know, other people, all musicians want that to happen. Mm-hmm. I'm just very lucky that I was one of the first people to have that happen, that real viral thing we're talking about. It'll keep happening for other people, but I'm glad I was able to really enjoy it like that.
Mm-hmm.
It would have been sad if it happened and I'd gone, oh, that feels weird. I don't like that song or something.
Yeah. It was a Mambo number 5, you know. Do you prefer being a pop star in your 40s to your 20s? Do you feel that you get on stage with a different kind of confidence now?
An unexpected confidence in a way. I wear things on stage and dance around on stage in a way that I think 20-year-old me would be slightly horrified by, actually.
20-year-old you.
Oh, yeah. She'd be like,
is a prude then, because you look great.
She'd be cringing so much. The glorious thing is I don't care that much. I enjoy it a lot more. I wasn't sure what lay ahead. I had quite a clear idea of my 30s, and then my 40s came and I thought, oh, what's that all about? But I think that was my big goal, really, was to just stop being, you know, putting myself in the mind of someone at the back of the room watching me perform who's not enjoying it and writing a critique, just to shed all that and have fun.
People love to write about the thing they can't do.
Yeah, that's true. Mm-hmm. And I think no one can be better at writing those reviews than ourselves, right?
Yeah.
But I don't really bother with that anymore. And I definitely used to. I could have come off stage any one time and done a, you know, side of A4 of all the things that were crap about the gig. And now I'm like, I haven't got time for that.
It really is an older woman's game, isn't it? Because you do need a certain type of confidence to go out and do that at all. I mean, thinking about you at 18 doing it is wild. An 18-year-old should almost never be put in that position at all. But that's what the majority of the new pop stars are 18.
Yeah.
I think you're such a versatile performer. I saw you at the King's Trust. You did a charity performance and it was a tough gig because I cannot stand doing comedy gigs like this. I don't know if a music gig is just as hard where it's a dinner and it's very posh and it's all set up for some heartbreaking cause.
Yeah.
There were children battling life-changing, you know, illnesses and different things in that room. And then you went on and it would have been a tough gig, I think, for anyone else. But you had the children on stage. You had them dancing. It was
that.
Really
jumping around.
Joyful. Yeah. And I thought, not me. I couldn't do that.
Well, I think there's a few things at play there. I think, firstly, when you've sat in the room, you sort of, you understand a little of the context of what that might feel like.
Yeah.
People. So you've got to have that empathy first off. And secondly,
so that's what I'm missing maybe.
Or just a confidence trick. Definitely. You have to be like, I mean, I've done gigs where I'm like, this is literally an anxiety dream.
Yes. Or just corporate.
Yeah. And you're like, but I actually now find that almost quite amusing. Like, yeah, this is so awkward, but the quicker I can give people the impression that, look, if you don't dance, I'm totally cool with that. If you want to talk, if you don't feel like participating, it's fine. I'm going to be happy in my own little world no matter what you do. And then everybody starts to relax.
Yeah.
It's actually quite awkward if you're sat there and someone's suddenly singing in front of you, isn't it? So I do get it. So I just try and do as many things possible to just convey that everything is cool no matter what. They don't need to do anything for me. We're fine. And then hopefully it works out. And actually having kids in the room is great.
Yeah.
Because they're so instinctive with music. So yeah, if I can get the kids involved, that helps me a lot too.
And you did, and it was wonderful.
Thank you.
And do you think you're also more confident asking for what you want in a studio setting?
Still struggle with things like that a little bit, actually.
Still a woman.
Yes, and a people pleaser, and those habits are hard to break. And I've always felt like I've got a number of goes in my head. So I've got maybe like 3 goes where I can say, can we tweak this? Can we change that? And if I've used up all 3 and we're not where I need it to be, I'll normally just be like, this song is not going to be used.
Oh.
Because it's not working for me.
Yeah.
But I think what I have got better at and is probably more fundamental is that I work with people who make me feel safe. So I'm not counting goes anymore. I think I've done a lot of that.
Mm-hmm.
I could speak for this whole podcast just about really bad songwriting sessions I've had. And now I've just worked with people who I like. And those incidents where you think, ah, waste of time, hardly ever happens. Just once in a blue moon.
Have there been some odd collaboration offers since the viral hit of Murder on the Dance Floor? Do you get like rappers coming out of the woodwork?
Actually, I'll tell you what. I mean, I won't, not naming any names, but when
Ja Rule.
When Murder was first starting to gain traction.
Because they love Murder, some of them.
It's true. You can be really literal with a song like that, I guess. But when Murder was the first gaining traction, you know the phrase, success has many fathers. So I'd never had anything released in America at all. I'd literally not even done so much as a radio interview.
Not even Murder on the Dance Floor?
No.
In its infancy?
Nothing. Oh. Literally, I did my first ever interviews in America last January.
I always assumed, because when I came to this country, it was 2007 or 2008, and I always assumed that you were also known in America.
No, nothing. And that was cool. I'd always just gone when there's momentum, right? So once America started to get involved and the label, there was lots of suggestions about, you know, really incredible hip artists that they could maybe do a new version of Murder with.
Oh.
And they were really cool people they were suggesting. So it wasn't anything about that. I just felt like I'm a bit obsessed with stories behind stuff. I'm like, but what's the story? Why is this? Why is it this person and me? Do I mean something to them? Have they inspired something for me? Why are we? I can't just be a graph of like, you know, this person's doing well and that song's doing well. So that plus that equals even bigger bucks.
Like the algorithm. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. So I turned down those opportunities because I felt in my gut I'd rather have 2 weeks having a crazy affair with whoever's having murder on my terms than 3 months supporting a version of the song that I do not understand why I'm doing it. So that version of things I did.
I think that's a wild, wild idea.
I thought so. But it's so fun to say no with experience behind you of knowing how you feel when you've said yes to things that you should have done. It's like, that's a real thing you can earn with, if you're lucky enough to have a long career, is that benefit of experience, being able to say no to things on your own terms. Like that felt really good.
And they would be gobsmacked, Americans. They'd be like, they think you're the new Office.
Yeah, well, you know, and I get it. And like, I went for an amazing meeting in the record company, and they're all sat round, and they're, you know, all excited, and they're talking about the next record, and my brain is just singing, "Will You Still Love Me Tomorrow?" You know, and that's not because there's any cynicism directly on them. It's just experience, you know. Like, let's just wait and see what happens. You've got to enjoy that moment without any expectation of what might happen next. Just take it for what it is.
But a new collab might be fun, though. Like, murder's murder, and it's crazy to try to... How do they think? Okay, but that's... They're American. They're on amphetamines. But something new would be cool. Like, what is the most off-the-wall artist that no one would expect you to collaborate with that you think, oh, I actually listen to their music and I enjoy it? I'll throw out some wild American names and you say yes or no.
Go on.
50 Cent.
I think no, I can't see that.
Okay.
What do you think? Should I?
Yes.
Oh, okay, fine.
Dolly Parton.
Oh my God, yes. Come on. Nobody says no to Dolly.
Yeah.
Although I just want to spend the whole time talking to her.
I know.
I'd be like, Dolly, we haven't written a song. It's 6 p.m.
JoJo Siwa.
I don't know. I can't picture that.
No.
I did do a song with Nile Rodgers.
That, oh.
Yeah. He's lovely. And that would never have happened without murder.
No.
Go to disco. Go to the home of disco. Come on.
That is really cool. Okay. Music is ageless. It transcends, you know, cultures, languages, everything else. Do you think that having a lovely pursuit like that will reduce your biological age? Will it have an impact?
Yes, I think it does. I think if you can, I think being creative actually does help with that. Because if you're creative, you're allowed to play. And I don't think everybody gets to play as part of their day job.
But my biological age is high and I'm creative, I mean, arguably.
Yeah.
And I think it might just mean I've got ADHD or it makes me older. I think I think about too much.
Well, hang on a minute. I need to know more about what's gauging the biological age?
I took the test.
I know, but what did the test look for?
Inflammation mostly. Okay. I don't know. I'll bring out the scientist.
Yeah, I don't. Maybe I don't mind being inflamed.
Yeah. Good. I'm glad you're making me feel a lot better.
Yeah. What's the proof in this? I mean,
thank you. We'll see.
The proof, but also everybody's got their own version of what makes them feel good in their skin, right?
What about dancing?
Maybe taking biological tests is aging.
Maybe. It's very stressful for me, actually, Sophie.
There you go.
Do you think dancing is youthful? Keeps you?
Not necessarily.
Excuse me. I loved the Pam Dam dancing in the kitchen.
Thank you. And I think dancing is one of most pleasurable things in life. I love dancing and it always makes me feel better. It's a tonic. I don't know if it makes you feel young, but it makes you feel better.
Yeah. Mm. It's good for the soul.
Definitely.
Do you think people dance less as they get older?
Yeah, they can do. But then I think it's probably like when you're young, you dance with absolutely no inhibition.
Mm.
Then, you know, teenage, and then it kind of gets like, and then I think you emerge out the other side. But I think if you want to dance, you don't have to dance. But if you like it, do it. It feels good.
You should try, maybe, even if you don't want to. Sort of like having sex with your husband. I don't know what your relationship's like, but they say that the more you do it, the more you want to do it.
Yeah.
Because if you don't want to do it and you're like, oh, well, and then you put it off and then you turn around, and it's been a month and then you really don't want to do it. Why should you do it? You've got on a month without doing it. Let's see how far you could take this.
Yeah.
Maybe dancing's the same.
Maybe dancing's the same.
You do it and then you want to do it a bit more.
Yeah. Yeah.
But you would have very musical children.
Not all of them, actually.
No.
My second one down is not interested in music at all, which I find really interesting. He said to me a few years back, I don't understand why people go to gigs. There's the first 10 minutes where it's quite exciting and then you're just waiting for it to finish. And I was thinking, firstly, he's probably talking about my gigs. Secondly, I've definitely been to gigs like that.
Yeah.
But no, I don't think they are all. But yeah, the ones that are passionate about it.
Is there a paternity question with the second one, maybe?
Actually, I think he might be the one who looks most like me. So possibly, yeah, there's a question mark there.
Maybe you just made him all on your own. You are that hyper independent.
Yeah, just tried that.
You just multiplied like a seahorse. Yeah.
Or like a gremlin. I ate after midnight and got some water on me. And then.
So you're married to bassist Richard Jones.
Yes.
How's that?
It's good, thanks. We are fast approaching our 20th wedding anniversary this year.
I know. One of the longest marriages in show business.
Yeah, you can multiply by three in showbiz dog years.
You guys are a very traditional family in many ways. Like, you're super hands-on with the kids. You have a lot of them. Mm-hmm. Some would say too many. Not me. No, you have a lot. You have like a YouTuber amount.
Yeah, I know. That would be,
you know,
another thing. Yeah.
Have you not monetized them?
No, I mean, I do think if there had been camera, like, people will come around and just be watching the house like, oh my gosh, but.
Have you been offered like a docuseries, reality show type thing, like the Beckhams?
No. We've been offered.
I would be very interested in that.
Offended, haven't been offered. Yeah, I suppose in a lot of ways it's quite traditional. In a lot of ways it's not. It's a mixture, isn't it? I mean, musician parents probably carries with it some elements that are a bit not go outside of the typical, I think.
Is the family dynamic similar to the audition? Like, you're the bassist, I'm the lead.
I think there's definitely dynamic that is probably quite typical of when it comes to our on-stage work. Firstly, we have our work is quite different, so I wouldn't tell him how to play bass. He wouldn't start getting involved with what I do. And I think that makes us kind of appreciate what each other's doing and work quite well. But also, I'm much more comfortable being extrovert on stage. But then when we go home, I'm more introvert and he's the more gregarious, more social, more likely to get FOMO and all that kind of stuff. And I'm the one who's just a bit more like, can happily just, I love nights in and yeah, just being at home. So I think that's probably quite a typical thing, isn't it?
I think a lot of performers are like that,
yeah.
Like introverted extroverts.
Are you like that?
I definitely am like that. I mean, I say performers and then I felt like I should correct it to female performers.
Mm.
I think the boys in my industry anyway are like, me, 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 enough about you. What do you think about me? And they're like that in their social lives,
yeah.
A lot of them. But no, I'm quite in feminine energy, what I would call it, at home. Like, I sleep with the kids in their nursery still. And like, I do a lot at home and my husband is a house husband, but I think he would still be like quite the leader and he likes people and he likes to have loads of friends. I don't have any friends.
It's quite hard to make time to see friends.
I know.
Yeah.
Because you made all these friends, the people.
Mm.
What about diet and exercise? Like, what is your, I know your mother banned the word diet, but in terms of wellness, like health, do you guys include a lot of plants in your diet? Do you cook at home?
Yeah, we both like cooking. And our nanny Carolina cooks as well. So the kids eat like home cooked meals.
Great.
We all get excited about food. And my mum cooks. The kids are learning to cook. Yeah, I think I take a lot of pleasure from making myself something to eat.
Mm-hmm.
And I enjoy it. I don't find it stressful. Richard's a better cook than me. And I think he takes criticism better. So if I make supper and they say, I don't like it,
yeah,
dagger to my heart.
Oh, no.
He can cope. He'll be like, tell me more about that. What do we change next time? I can't do that. I'm just like, that was love on a plate and you rejected it.
Yeah.
But wellness, I kind of went like that when you asked me because I don't think that's something I'm very good at.
No.
Don't take much time for myself. I'm not looking to be a martyr. I just put it very low down on the list. Is wellness just trying to get a good night's sleep? Probably. I know it counts towards feeling better.
Yeah.
I think it's probably fairly minimal, isn't it?
Well, again, I don't want to threaten you too much with the scientist, but she does speak to me about plants, about walking, about being outdoors, and about sleep.
Mm.
I think that's what hurts mothers the most when it comes to biological
definitely.
Age, especially touring, working mothers.
Yeah, I've definitely aged myself with a lack of sleep. I will function on very low sleep.
How many hours are we talking?
I can do, in my head, I think if I get five, That's good. That's like I can do the next day. I try to get a bit more, but most nights I'm getting, probably about 6. I don't think it's enough.
Scientist is not going to like that.
I know. I actually do know it. But I think I don't want the kids to miss out on me being there for, getting them up for school or for putting them to bed just because I'm tired. I will power through. And I don't think I win any prizes for it ultimately, but it's the thing I've done to myself. And I do recognize that. But then I like being part of that part of their day. And I will get early flights back and just push on, try and ignore any jet lag if that's what I'm dealing with, that kind of thing. I don't think it's necessarily that clever. It's just what I do.
I know what you mean. And I'm not sure if the men in our industry do exactly the same, if the dads in our industry feel the same impulse to put in the hours.
The walking, you mentioned walking outside. I'm good at that. I walk a lot. I always walk the school run and then walk back. And I try and get proper walks in every day because that is the best thing for my head.
Your head and your heart. I think that's good for biological age. Exactly. I think they don't want us exercising too much.
Well, that's good because I'm really bad at that at the moment.
Your mom is, of course, Jana Ellis, the Blue Peter presenter, for those who don't know. She taught you really positive things about aging, and she sounds, formidable, more formidable than I could have imagined. But I know she was recently widowed, and I'm really sorry to hear that. How did your eldest son come to live with her? Because that must be rejuvenating.
Yes, that's really been lovely, actually. I mean, their relationship has always been good. They're really close. And I have to say, I sowed the seed of Sunny moving in there a little while back because I could see that the tone of the house, I think, is sort of dictated by the youngest member. So if you've got little kids, that's where the energy comes from in the house. And I thought Sunny needed something that was a little bit more steady, a little like be allowed to grow into the next bit of his life. This is all once he was getting older. So when he was about 16, 17, I said to him, maybe when you finish your A-levels, if you're not going to uni, maybe you move into grandma's down the road. And yes, this also was sort of tied into my stepdad. My lovely stepdad, John, died 5 years ago. So that was when Sunny was 16. So I was probably thinking about maybe when Sunny turned like 17. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so he got to 19 and it was like, okay, how do you feel about it? You can always come home again. He's still got a room, but well, I say that he's got a brother in it, but theoretically move that brother out. And happily, it's worked out really well. I mean, he is only local. He comes home, like he still has his piano lesson and his guitar lesson at our house. So I see him for those, if not a billion other times during the week as well. Mm-hmm. And I think it's worked really well. They're really close. They've got enough freedom, but then my mum's not on her own as well.
Yeah.
Because I didn't like the idea of my mum being on her own. It seems good for now. I mean, if it changes shape next week, it might not be forever, but I think for now it suited their needs. And has allowed Sunny to explore the next bit of his young adulthood in a way that I couldn't really offer him with a busy house at home.
It sounds great. They're living like the Golden Girls.
It's really cute.
Yeah.
It's quite wholesome as well, isn't it?
It is.
It is quite wholesome.
I really like it.
I like it too.
And do you have elderly people in your family? Like, do people live a long time?
My granny, she died when she was 91.
Oh, that's
Sybil Baxter.
The scientist will like that.
Ah, I like it too.
Sybil is a great name.
Isn't it too good?
Yeah.
I love it. And actually, I think ever since I was a little girl, I kind of thought that's probably how I'm going to grow up. And actually, again, that's probably helped give me a good example of getting older and how you can. I mean, she did her first ever skiing trip when she was 79, which I think is really amazing. She used to do something called the Women's League of Health and Beauty. Have you ever heard of
that? Oh, no.
No, it's a really unusual thing. I mean, it's really cute. It seemed to be quite an old fashioned, but again, very wholesome. It was sort of walking and poise. So sort of, I suppose it was a bit like, I'm not going to say it right. Calisthenics.
Oh, I know what you mean, like calinetics, but it might not be that.
It might not be that.
But that's what I think.
Yes, that's the word I'm thinking of. And you said it better than me. But that was very trendy, I think, in like...
Like prancer size.
Yeah, it's like sort of having... I'm sitting up straight.
I'm thinking of it. Simple.
I can't say it and I wasn't doing it. but it's to do with, like being in your body and keeping good posture. And so Women's League of Health and Beauty was all about that. So it was dancing and movement and balance and I suppose keeping a sort of a body awareness. And she did that right up until her 80s, actually.
It's probably so much more effective than the fillers and the Botox and the things that we're doing now.
Well, I guess that's a slightly different thing.
But I think the women doing it, because I was definitely, I got lost in the game of fillers and Botox in my 30s. In my 40s, I decided it's counterintuitive and it sort of drags your face down. It makes you look different. But I certainly, my intention was, yeah, it'll make me look fresher and prettier. But when you think about fresh air and posture, and even the way now they're saying you've got to, I mean, I think the advice now for aesthetic youth and beauty is tape your mouth shut, which I find offensive
what,
at night.
You're sleeping.
Yeah.
No, I'm not going to bother with that.
They're doing all this Korean tape.
I need to, like, take my contacts out every night.
Don't you?
I'm supposed to.
So what do you do then for the visible signs of aging?
Okay, I'm actually really bad. I probably should do more.
Well, you got to take the contacts out.
Yeah. Well, funny story. I now only wear one contact lens as well. The contact lenses were correcting my long sight. But as you know, you lose this bit of your range when you get older. But if you're short-sighted, you don't. I can still see in my bad eyes. I can see close up still very well.
Okay.
But the contact lens was overcorrecting that. So I started to not be able to read if I had my contacts in. So I now have one in for sitting far away and one out to read and see stuff close up. And I'm sure someone out there will be like, there'll be messages like, what are you doing? That is a terrible idea. Richard finds it really funny.
Yeah, you're multitasking.
I'm sort of self-built bifocals.
It's kind of genius because you're like, I have two eyes.
Yeah, one of them's doing one side, a lot far away.
One of them's the basis.
If I take the contact down, yes, I do take that. I used to sleep in them more. I don't anymore.
Thank you.
Taping my mouth shut.
No.
Nah.
Would you like to find out your biological age now?
Go on then.
Here comes the science woman.
Wow.
I think it's time to find out, Sophie Ellis-Bextor, how old you really are.
Go on then.
Very dramatic. Do you have a guess?
Well, I mean, you mentioned several things I do wrong. So lack of sleep, lots of kids, quite a stressy type of life. I'm going to put myself, I'm going to go for in my 60s.
60s?
Why, is that optimistic?
No, I wouldn't think you were in your 60s.
Look, check you out thinking you have some whippersnapper over there.
No,
I'm going to go 60s, but I'm also, I'm cool with it.
You seem...
I'm sitting down.
Just very cool with whatever. Yeah. Okay, we are joined by Dr. Nicola Conlon. She is a scientist who can interpret these results for us. Sophie Ellis-Bextor, your result is... 38 years old.
Have you muddled me up with someone else?
Very good. And that is 7 years younger than your chronological age.
I'm going to be 46 next month.
Yeah, well, you know, you can use this age
is
now.
Awesome.
Would you like to deliver a speech?
I do feel pretty chuffed, but I also feel like I must have just had like a good morning when you did the blood test, because I don't feel this is deserved, but I'm grateful, and I promise to use my bonus 7 years wisely.
Nicola, what's happening? Because I thought having kids was bad.
No, I mean, first of all, what it's actually measuring. So when we're looking at the test and what it actually does, it's looking at how old you are on the inside. And I know you sort of mentioned earlier, like, what is the science behind it and what are we actually measuring? And what we're looking at is the age of your cells. So everything to do with our bodies, our health, the way we age, it all starts at the cellular level in our bodies. So this particular test is actually looking at the amount of inflammation in your body. So we know that inflammation is bad for cellular health. It damages our cells. And there are lots of different ways to measure your biological age, but this particular test, Glycan Age, is looking at the levels of inflammation in your body. So what this shows to us is that for whatever reason, whether it's genetics, lifestyle, that you actually have the levels of inflammation that would be more typically found in someone younger, in someone around at that age. So you are on the inside, you know, very healthy, and that, you know, clearly reflects on the outside. But when I looked, you did a questionnaire. So you did a questionnaire that looks at your lifestyle, because we know lifestyle is a huge part of how well you will age. It's estimated to account for around 80% of how well you'll age. It's only a small percentage that is genetics.
That's interesting. I didn't know that. that way weighted.
Yeah, it actually is. So you have a real control over how well you're going to age by what you do with your lifestyle. And, you know, generally your questionnaire was great. It looked like you eat a really healthy diet, and you said you're home cooking food all the time. People actually don't realize how powerful the diet is when it comes to biological age mm-hmm. and the health you are on the inside. You know, now we eat so much processed food yeah. and we just don't realize how inflammatory that is. A lot to do with how it affects your gut microbiome. Mm-hmm. It does damage your gut microbiome quite a lot. And when your gut microbiome becomes damaged, that means you get inflammation across the entire body. Okay. So I loved it when you were saying, you know, you're home cooking. That means, you know, you're using probably a lot of vegetables, a lot of different herbs, spices, and really making sure you know what goes into your food. So that's great. The only thing I would pick up on is the yes. thing you said about the sleep. Yeah, no, you know, we know sleep is literally the time when your body repairs.
Yeah.
You know, you have such an amazing regenerative capacity that happens during sleep. So yeah. clearly everything else you're doing is compensating for it. But probably just a little one to keep an eye on, as soon as you did kind
How
of thing.
Much sleep?
Probably not 5 hours. Mm-hmm. you know, everyone's different. Everyone has a different amount. We're all individuals, but you want to be aiming for probably around 7 is kind okay. of is the average. So it's not achievable. Huge.
Do you think
it's
you can achievable. Stretch to 7, Sophie?
Yes.
Will
yes,
you though?
I will try. I think mm-hmm. the tricky thing I have, and I'm sure this is like the same for a lot of people, particularly if they've got young children in the houses, you get to the evening time and I get excited. Oh, that's my time. And and I find it, every day I promise myself, I'm going to get an early night tonight. And then it comes to sort of 10 or 11 and I'm still so happy, you know, doing all the other things. And, you know, even like, I don't never feel guilty when I'm sat there on the internet, like scrolling, because I'm like, I love doing this for my having like time when it just doesn't matter. Like, I'm really happy. I know that you're not supposed to admit to that.
But you are. Yeah, I think if that's your like meditative it. Practice.
Yeah, a little bit of that or yeah. anything, actually, watching telly, anything.
Nicola, can that count as sleep if you're not moving a lot?
That's a serious question.
Running around.
Yeah, it's better. And like you say, it's unwinding. Mm-hmm. You know, stress is obviously, it plays a huge part to how how well we'll age.
Yeah.
And
I think, can I improve on this?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Because I think maybe there are things I could do that would be better. And, you know, like everybody, I'll have good weeks and bad weeks. And particularly traveling around means you sometimes, if you're on tour, it's really hard to make sure you're getting vegetables and fruit. It's just hard to come by sometimes.
Yeah.
So I think I can probably be better.
Everything is bread on the train.
Yeah, bread and processed and time for long life and all of that sort of stuff.
Yeah, preservatives.
And just if you're traveling, just getting something that hasn't had, you know, an unadulterated bit of fruit or veg is quite tricky sometimes.
Outside the diet, what are you thinking? What are you going to do?
I think the sleep thing is valid.
Kalinetics? Are you familiar with Kalinetics?
I wasn't, but I mean, again, just looking at your lifestyle, I think there's a few things that flag which are probably really beneficial and have helped with this age. And I think dancing and music. Yeah. I mean, there's no direct studies looking at dancing or music with biological age, but just take sound. So we know for centuries, sound therapy is being used by different cultures and different practices. And it's always kind of been thought of as a bit woo-woo, you know, how can a sound actually influence, you know, your cells or the way you're feeling. But now there's a lot of studies showing that actually listening to music can actually reduce inflammation in the body.
Really?
Yeah. So literally looking at the effect of music on different inflammatory factors. Yeah. And we think the link here is actually stress. We know music is something that if you're enjoying it, it's something you put on some good music, you can de-stress.
Yeah.
And when you lower cortisol, which is the stress hormone in the body, we know that has a direct impact on like aging. Stress literally ages you.
Yes.
But even more important, I think, is the effect of things like dancing and music on social connectedness. And I think this is a really interesting one, because we know in people that live to a great age, in these blue zones where people seem to live really long, healthy lives, social connectedness and not having any loneliness or isolation plays a massive role.
Yeah,
and obviously, you've said personally yourself, you surround yourself with good people, and that makes you feel young. It makes you feel good.
Yes.
But also,
and you're fun to live with your mom.
Yeah, I was literally going to say that, having somebody, being with someone has such an impact. We know in older people, loneliness can be a major issue.
Yes.
But also, I was personally a huge fan of when you did your kitchen discos during COVID. And I honestly think that will have reduced people's biological age during that phase, because we know that people, when they're lonely, it increases stress, it increases inflammation. Yeah. It actually even lowers our immune system. There are studies showing that. So bringing people together to have a sense of community is actually really, really powerful. There is science behind it.
I like it. And I think maybe some more science could be looked up for this movement and dance. Because actually, for the podcast, I recently spoke to Arlene Phillips, who's 81. Mm. She looks phenomenal.
Yeah, dancers.
Mm-hmm. Tony Basil and others. 81 looks amazing.
Yeah.
My granny with her. A gentle exercise up until 91. You know, it might be something in it.
Yeah.
I think so. I suppose it's like habitual changes that, habitual good habits that are most long, far reaching. So something gentle that you enjoy. That's not very hard thing. I wondered as well, you mentioned about gut health. Mm. I have gherkins on my rider. Mm. Maybe that's helpful too.
Yeah, fermented foods, very good for gut health, good for...
It makes fun of me.
Positive bacteria.
Where do you get the gherkins? Are they sweet? Are they dill?
I leave it open to interpretation. It's on my rider, so it will be supplied by the venue.
Have you ever had Canadian gherkins?
Oh, what would that be?
Oh my gosh. So the gherkins in this country, I hate to tell you, are trash. And if you have a Canadian, I know you still love them, because what can you do?
Okay. I'm open to gherkins of all
you take what you could get.
Yeah.
But in Canada, they're like big and so crunchy and very dilly.
That sounds great.
And garlicky, like just the most delicious.
I would have had them when I was in Canada on tour.
Do you have any plans to go soon? I'm going to recommend you some brands.
Okay.
The way I feel about gherkins, I could have a gherkins.
It's actually making my mouth.
Yeah. Conversation all about gherkins.
Me too.
Yeah.
Love gherkins.
Gherkin age.
Gherkin age. Next one.
Yeah. And then I guess maybe it helps with pickling meat.
It is a fermented food, right?
Yeah. Fermented food. Good for gut health and promoting healthy bacteria in the gut. Which, lowers biological age. Yeah. So,
but I like that. That's so sweet. That's very heartening, all the stuff about the community and togetherness and movement. I mean, that's one of the things that's so powerful about music, isn't it? Mm. About getting everybody together and having those gatherings. I think that's so precious.
Yeah.
Maybe we're a bit more aware of that now than we've...
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, even yourself, you have a large family and five children.
Yeah.
And
so I thought that was bad for you.
Well, so the research, really interesting, the research looking at the relationship between biological age and children is, it's kind of a bit mixed. So
depends on the child.
What it shows is when you are pregnant, it actually reverses your biological age. So whilst you are pregnant, you actually age backwards. We think that's to do with the high levels of estrogen in the body. Estrogen is very protective in a woman's body. So estrogen goes up. When you actually give birth, it's actually aging. Mm. Now, there was a theory like, is this because it's the practice of looking after a child? You've got less sleep. It's stressful. Or is it the physical effects on the body? So they actually looked at men and looked at what happens to a man during fatherhood and found it didn't affect the man. So that would suggest...
What a shock.
I mean, this was interpreted as that it meant that it was the physiological effects it had on the woman's body. Mm-hmm. But then I'm not really sure what the control was about, how equal was the night feeds or the parenting
primary carer.
Exactly that.
For example, a man that's the primary carer can get what would be regarded as the female version of postnatal depression. And it alters the brain chemistry can be altered by whoever is the primary carer. Yeah.
And I know
so
women
need to know a bit more.
Yeah, they've had surrogates and they still have postnatal depression, even though they weren't carrying the baby themselves.
And the good news is, I guess, for both of you, is that actually if you have more than three children, you are actually at a much around a 12% reduced risk of things like dementia. So actually having more children is actually better.
Because you don't have time to lose your mind.
maybe that.
I don't know about that, though. I mean, I already call them all the wrong names.
But what age did you have your last child?
39.
Okay, so again, there's some recent research come out to show that the older you were when you have your last child, the lower your biological age. And actually between 35 to 40 is kind of, whereas somebody, I had my daughter much younger. Now that we are supposed to age worse, have a higher biological age. Again, the science behind it, probably due to the fact that if you are having children older, your estrogen stays high. Fertility is very highly linked with aging well. So again, it, you know, could be something
that. Yeah,
that
kind of makes sense.
Yeah.
I think that's the thing, isn't it? There's always, you know, other factors that come in.
Yeah.
How you might be feeling about your financial situation if you're having a baby at that age.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, there's probably lots of other things.
Yeah.
Extraneous, but overall, it's all worked out quite well.
So yeah.
Yes, the Gherkins, kids, having them old.
You had some very anti-inflammatory kids.
Yeah. We're a couple in there.
Well, that's all very good news, Nicola. Yeah. Anything else that you would like to, any more wisdom about how to reduce this biological age even further? Or just keep nailing it.
Keep nailing it. I mean, the sleep would be the only thing out of everything that I would just say just to keep an eye on. But, you know, whatever you're doing is clearly working well. So,
okay. So my lads still have the one contact lens during the day.
Yeah, I have no studies on that.
No wonder. I have been experimenting.
Your patient zero.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I only started quite recently, so you could have me on again in like 5 years.
Let us know how it goes.
Exactly.
Thank you so much for your time today. I know how busy you are.
Thank you. No, I find talking about getting older really interesting.
Yeah.
It's something I think about a lot.
Thank you to Sophie Ellis-Bexter, my wonderful guest on What's My Age Again. And thank you so much for listening. Please like and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.